Hey guys, and welcome to the Bright and Fit podcast. I'm so excited to be here. I'm your host, Tatiana, money and fitness professional and everyday energizer bunny. From health, wellness, and everyday life challenges and topics, the Bright and Fit podcast will discuss interesting and fun ways to reinvent ourselves at any age. I hope you can join me. Hi everyone, this is Tatiana. I'm your friend and host, and this is the Bright and Fit podcast. This is episode number 9. It is a beautiful day out there as always. I hope you guys are doing phenomenal. Today's topic is going to be named Surviving and Thriving Rheumatoid Arthritis or RA. And for this, I have my guest and friend, Diana Morales Arce. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Tati. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. So today we wanted to specifically speak about this topic and bring some awareness on what RA is, rheumatoid arthritis. And I gotta say that I learned a lot about this topic in my research. So what is a better way to get started than to get to know our guest? And this is my friend from a long, long time, Diana Morales Arce, and she goes by D, or old school D. So we're going to be saying, you know, Diana or D in the podcast. And the reason why we wanted to also bring awareness is because recently I have had a lot of information and a lot of people with mental health awareness. There's also come physical awareness, right? So one of the most important topics is to correlate the emotional with the physical awareness, right? So tell me about you. Who is Diana Morales Arce?
Well, first, thank you for having me, Tati. It's a pleasure to be able to bring this to your audience and get them to know a little bit more about me and also the autoimmune condition that I've been dealing with for now. I believe, I got diagnosed at 35. So it's going to be almost 15 years. So I'm 49 years old. I don't ever hesitate to disclose my age because age is nothing but a number. I'm sure some people have heard of that before. And more so in my situation, because of my autoimmune disorder, I don't let it define me. I don't let it get the best out of me. I've had to learn that throughout the course of my journey with it. I'm a mother of two children, adults now. My son is 25 years old. His name is Kijana Jamal Roland. And my daughter, who's 20, her name is Alondra Vivian Arce. Very proud of them both. They're both doing their own thing. My son lives up in near Chicago right now. He's doing his own thing at the YMCA, personal training, and also very big into fitness. So runs in the family, I guess. And my daughter, she's up in Gainesville right now, attending University of Florida. She's going to be entering her third year. So I'm very proud of them both. They've also, of course, been my motivator behind my autoimmune condition as well. And so where to start off? There's two sides of me. On the educational side, I have my master's in social work with a minor in psychology. I did social work for a few years, counseling high school students and also adults. I really enjoyed the work itself because I've always been very proactive with helping people, helping others, those that do not have the tools or resources to do better for themselves. And so I worked in the school system for several years before going into the Child Protective Investigations area at the Sheriff's Office. So I have that background. And but on the other side, my other huge background is in health and fitness. I've been in the fitness field for about 27 years now. I started off as a group fitness instructor and then went into personal training for about 10 years. And then because of changes and moving to Florida from Chicago, because I'm a Chicago native, then I streamed back into the the educational system part of it, and then but still taught classes on the side. So I've been doing that, and that has actually been a huge support system for me as far as teaching classes and staying physically active, because with my condition, the last thing that I believe anybody should do is be sedentary, because if you don't use it, you lose it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's been very key for me, to keep it active no matter what I've done, whether I've been a teacher, because I was actually also a school teacher for 2 years. But unfortunately, because of the dynamics and the school system and the structure, I ended up leaving the school system to, again, go into, you know, work at the sheriff's office. So it's been quite a journey, of course, and I'm going to be turning 50 in January of 2022, which I'm really looking forward to. With that, of course, has been the ups and downs, the struggles, and then the mental and physical challenges with my condition. But again, I have not let it define me.
That's awesome. So with the education part, so you were a social worker, you graduated as a social worker, and then you also had some specializing in adult counseling?
Yes.
And psychology. Okay. Did you have like counseling sessions with adults?
Yes. Yes. Well, I would have counseling sessions. Sometimes it would be more so geared towards their circumstances, whether it was domestic violence, whether it was them dealing with issues in their personal life, career, relationships.
That's amazing.
Some of them with their children, if they were having a really hard time connecting with their children. So it would be more individual. I did not do a lot of group, although I did it with the high school students that I worked with, more group counseling. But when it came to more of the adults, it was more individual.
That's amazing. That's something new that I learned about you.
Yeah.
So you were going to talk about, you know, how we met and our first memory of each other. But I wanted to also ask you, when you were a teacher, you said you were a teacher. Was it in high school or in elementary school? And how was that experience?
It was in middle school. Quite frankly, some of the veteran teachers said that I made a mistake by going into middle school, because that's a really tough crowd. The kids are like not knowing who they are. They're trying to figure things out. They're rebellious. They don't want to listen.
They're not children, but they're not adults. So
exactly.
They're different.
They're like in limbo at that point. So that was really, really tough. And I actually worked at a high risk school. I started off at a high risk school. So the children there needed a lot more support, a lot more being able to have somebody there. The way the structure happened, and the reason why I left, is because it's all inclusive in the school system. Like, you have kids with ADHD, then you have kids with behavior issues, all into the classroom with the regular kids. I felt at that point that I did not have the support needed to really manage those kids with special needs. So here I am trying to teach a lesson plan with 20, 25 students in the classroom. And then I have one child with ADHD who's acting out in the corner. And then I have another child with behavioral issues feeding off of that other child with the ADHD. So I just felt at that point I needed like a peer support person in the classroom to help manage those kids, so that way I could really focus on the lesson plan. That was really hard for me.
Yeah.
And also dealing with the parents, unfortunately. It's not like back then, you know, where, you know, if you got in trouble at school, the parents were automatically on it and you had to respect the adults and so on, or they went met with the teachers. Now the parents just like, you know, why are you reprimanding my child? And I'm like, well, your child was misbehaving in class or didn't do their homework. But then you're wondering why the kids are turned out the way they do.
Yeah. So it was a very challenging time, those couple of years. But overall, did you have any rewarding feeling from it?
Absolutely. Yes. Definitely the kids were the rewarding part of it, especially those that would come up to me and say, hey, I appreciate you. We're going to miss you, especially when I left, and seeing them thrive, because I taught history the first year and then I taught Spanish the second year. So having them grow into the subject that I was teaching, and then them, you know, being appreciative. I used to hold like certain events for, like, when I was teaching Spanish, like a big Cinco de Mayo event for my classroom. And, you know, they were all like so excited about it. And they were like, when are we going to have it again? And I said, well, as long as you guys do your homework. sitting, you know, pay That's attention great. In class and all that, we'll be able to do that. So actually my second year teaching, which was when I taught Spanish, that was actually the more rewarding year because I actually had more higher level kids in the classroom. And so not as much of the behavior stuff that I was experiencing the first year that I taught. So it was, for me, it was more rewarding because they got something out of it. And I, you know, we both, you know, got something out of it, each other.
That's awesome. So you are originally from Chicago.
And yes.
And tell us about your heritage. You speak Spanish, you speak English.
Yes, I'm Mexican American. I am first generation here. Both my parents are Mexican. And I was not born in Mexico, but I was born in Brownsville, Texas, which is like right next door to Mexico. It's like the border right there. But I only lived in Texas for a year. So when I was a baby, my parents decided to move up to Chicago for a better job opportunity because at the time my father was looking for a better stability. So they didn't have plans to stay up in Chicago for too long, but they're still there actually. So did not end up moving. So I was raised and grew up in Chicago. And I do miss it, of course, not the weather, obviously, but I do miss the culture, the heritage there, and everything that Chicago, the big city of Chicago, brings. But I ended up moving down here in 2008. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, you know, regret it. You know, I've enjoyed being here. Of course, it's been challenging with the job market and, you know, just the culture itself here in Florida. But it has its pros and cons too.
Yeah. So when you were in Chicago and you went from high school to college, what makes you decide for social work?
I've always had a big interest and drive in being support and being of support for people that, again, don't have a lot of resources, that are less economically disadvantaged. I've always done volunteer work, even when I was, you know, younger in high school. I'd like to do shelter, you know, support at shelters, fundraisers and all that. I've always wanted to do something. Now, one other fact about me, actually, and this is how one decision can change your whole life. I actually did not initially want to go into social work. I actually wanted to go into law enforcement.
Wow.
I wanted to join the FBI. I actually had already been doing my homework and research on it in college.
Nice.
I was planning to join, Chicago Police Department. And I had my application in front of me. I had a recruiter that I had already spoken to. They said that because I spoke Spanish, I was going to be very, you know, valuable on the force.
I see.
They told me about basic training. I was all gung-ho, ready to go. As soon as I brought it up to my parents, they shut that down quickly. So they were like, no, we don't want you to. It's too dangerous.
You know, we
don't want to end up burying our daughter. You know, they kind of gave me the guilt trip, quite honestly. And they're Latino parents, so they're very good at doing that. But they were just totally against it. Yeah, they were like, oh my gosh, you know, and I was like so torn because I didn't want to like go against my parents because, you know, it's not in us, you know, as far as our culture to go against our parents. I think the more of the American kids at that point, they kind of like, okay, whatever, you know, my mom and dad doesn't want me to, whatever. I didn't have that attitude. So I made a very like, you know, sad decision.
Solid decision.
Not pursue it. Yeah. So I ended up doing the social work part of it, but that was my love and my drive because I'd already looked into the FBI and everything, and now looking back, I kind of regret it, quite honestly, because I really would have wanted to, but then again, who knows where my life would be right now. I wouldn't have probably had my kids, who knows.
Yeah. And on that industry, Chicago is big in a lot of items. I'm not going to mention them because clearly I'm not a professional, nor am I an officer. But from what I hear from friends that are in the force, it's one of the highest, most violent cities in the United States. So
absolutely.
I don't think I would have
stayed as a police officer in the field. My goal was to get my master's in criminal psychology or forensics and then head on over to the FBI.
Wow, amazing. Hey, there's always an opportunity. Never late to go and pursue your dreams. But I wanted to continue and ask you about you as a person. So how did you start your fitness journey?
I was actually, I will never forget, when I finished my first year of college, they call it the freshman 15. I actually did not experience that the first year. I experienced that the second year. I had gained like 25 pounds. And for me, that was like a lot because I was always very thin. So my father enrolled us into, back then, they're not in existence anymore, but Valley Total Fitness. It was a huge gym chain back then in Chicago, in the area of Chicago, and all over the U.S. My first experience was stepping into a step aerobics class, because that was really popular back then in the, you know, late 90s and stuff. And I remember taking the class and just like feeling alive and everything. That was like my first experience ever taking a fitness, a group fitness class. Loved the step fitness format. I liked the instructors that I was taking. And then I thought inside myself, I was like, I could do this one day.
I could totally teach this.
Yeah, and I always had a fear of being in front of people though. And that was like something that I knew I had to overcome because I did not like being, you know, the speaker in front of a group. I was 20, let's see, I was 18, 19. I was 19 years old when that happened. Yeah, because it was the summer, my summer after I finished my freshman year of college. Nice. So I was 19. So that was my first experience ever being at the gym. I loved it. I loved the atmosphere. So what I did is when I came back in the fall, I decided to talk to the athletic director about teaching fitness classes to the college students. And he was like, okay, you know, well, what can you teach and stuff? And I'm like, well, I can teach either step aerobics, high low aerobics. So I started off with high low and step aerobics, but at the college level.
Now, you do have 28 years of experience in group fitness now, from when you were 19 up to where we are today. And we're not going to mention the age again, but it's been a long road. You're also a personal trainer, and I'm sure you have a lot more certifications to this point. Can you mention your certifications and licenses now?
Sure. Let's see. Well, I have the main one, which is through the Athletic Fitness Association of America, AFA. That's always been the one that I've carried. And actually back then when I first started, they didn't even ask you for a certification or license. They just said, can you teach? Okay, go. They didn't even ask you, you know, what credentials you had, you know, but I, of course, you know, I wanted a better, you know, have better experience, know how to stretch people, muscle groups and all that. So that's when I got my AFA. Then after that, I got two kickboxing certifications. One was from Thomas Enterprises. I don't even know if he exists anymore, but he was like very well known back then. And then I got one through Valley Total Fitness, actually. If you remember Billy Blanks, Tybo?
Yeah, of course. Those love kickboxing. And that's one of my fitness, which we're going to talk about how we met and, you know, helping being fitness colleagues.
He is
the eminence. Well, he was, you know, now it's
right.
It has transformed into a variety of formats, but yeah.
Absolutely. So Valley Total Fitness ended up creating their own version because obviously they couldn't take it from Billy Blank's Taibo. So they called it Kwon Do. So I ended up getting, you know, certified in that. Then I got my cycling certification due to numerous injuries that I was having because I was teaching a ton of classes. This was kind of crazy, but at one point I was teaching 20 classes a week. So that's a lot of wear and tear on the body. So I ended up having to kind of back off from the step aerobics, all the high impact, and I got certified in cycling. And then because I knew that it was so important at that point in my recovery from all these injuries I was having, Achilles tendonitis and other things, that I needed to take up like a mind body class. So I got certified in Pilates and I loved it. And ever since then, I've been teaching it even up to now. And hey, Doobie. Then I ended up also getting certified in the trampoline class, which is called, well, one of the versions was called Urban Rebounding. And I loved it because it's very nice, very comfortable on the joints. You're on a trampoline and you're doing like a strenuous workout. That cardio workout itself kills you. I mean, you're on it for 15 minutes and you're just like totally like you know, yeah. cardio-wise, you're pumped mm-hmm. and everything. So it was a great class to teach. I taught it just for a little bit. It didn't take off as much as other classes, but, you know, I was happy to teach it, of course, during the time that we had it.
Yeah.
And then I got certified in another kickboxing format called Turbo Kick. Shailene Johnson was the creator of Turbo Kick. Beachbody now, I guess, had taken it over.
Yes.
Love that format. She had a lot of like hip hop groove in the class and the music. So that's a format that I've enjoyed teaching since then. And then let me see what other formats I got certified in. I continue to get more cycling certification formats. Yoga was another one too. I do like Pilates over yoga, but I did teach a combination of yoga and Pilates called Yoga Lattes. So I got a certification in that. And gosh, I think that's it. But
the regular licenses on Zumba, you have the license.
Oh, right. I can't forget about Zumba, of course.
And you have the license in the other format that you teach.
I do have a few of the, say, like dance fitness formats, the Zumba. I had UJAM, of course, UJAM Fitness, and then recently Cypher Hip Hop and Break Fitness.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting. So this was all your fitness career, how you started and got all these certifications and licenses while holding a regular job as a social worker?
Yes, as a social worker and a teacher.
Okay, amazing. I love it. So how was your life 5 years ago versus now? You moved in 2008 to Florida, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So recently, in the last 5 years, what changes have you experienced in life?
I found myself being more stable. For example, if I'm going to talk from a career perspective, I joined the sheriff's office in 2015, which has now been 6 years. I've been there since then, and I do plan, unless I win the lotto though, but I do plan to retire from there.
Yes.
Because of the stability, especially after the pandemic and so many job losses and people scrambling to find work, the sheriff's office was always open. It did not believe in, laying off any of the employees. And they told us, you guys have a secure job. And even if your position is phased out, we'll find something else for you to do.
Yes.
So that really had me like, okay, I am job secure. They have good benefits as well. And so I don't really plan to leave there unless, of course, like I said, you know, maybe I win the lot or something, but I plan to retire from there. And I work at Child Protective Investigation. So I'm not a CPI, because some people have thought, oh, she's a Child Protective Investigator. I do have the qualifications for it, because you need a degree and you need to have passed the testing that they do. But I have seen their work. I've gone on ride-alongs with the CPIs, and that is just a very tough and very underappreciated field altogether.
Okay.
I'm amazed at what they do, at the salary that they get paid, and it's just, you know, and for me, it's not even the salary as much of the issue as the support that needs to be given to them. And also what they see out in the field.
The emotional impact.
Yes,
of the job.
Yeah. I don't know if I could do it. It's not for everybody. Some have been CPIs for years, and I'm like, wow, my hat goes off to you because they've been in the field, but that's been tough.
Mm-hmm.
So I've enjoyed being there. And so I'm more on the administrative side. I do support for them. For example, creating the files for them, putting stuff together for them, giving them the messages, or, you know, sometimes I try to, you know, help them out as far as when the parents come in really angry after the kids have been removed, try to de-escalate situations. Right. That's where the social work part of it comes in. But it's been a rewarding time there. I did win 2017. It was unexpected, but much of an honor that 2017 I was chosen Employee of the Month, Employee of the Quarter, and then Employee of the Year for the whole Sheriff's Office.
And so, 2015 is when you and I met, which leads to my next question. But I want to say that your career so far in the fitness industry and in the professional, you know, field as a child protective officer is amazing. And that's absolutely just mind blowing.
Thank you, Tati.
But so in 2015 is when we met. We've been in for 6 years. What is the first memory that, just in a few words, what's your first memory of me that you remember?
I remember that it was at Shapes Family Fitness, the one in Brandon. I, of course, was teaching very actively there. And I remember you coming in. And the first thing that I remember is your big smile. And you were like very like, you know, sociable and talkative. And I was like, who is this?
Who's this lovely girl that got up?
Because I had never seen you before. You were, of course, new to the area. And I was like, wow, you know, she's got like a fantastic personality and very like, you know, sociable and open. And then, of course, I started seeing you teach and all that. I was like, wow, she's an energizer bunny.
And we're going to get there. The first memory that I have of you is attending your class and then coming to say hello to you, getting familiar with it. And I'm like, holy cow, she moves. And we started becoming friends. You were there for when I had my last child. You've seen me in different stages in my life, and we've taught so many classes together. We've been in so many different fitness events and projects, and I've gotten to know you as a friend and as a fitness fellow instructor. So I'm so happy that you took my invitation to speak about something in relation to the wellness and, you know, fitness industry.
Yes, thank you.
You're very welcome. So what makes you, I'm going to ask you some questions and then we're going to get into the topic, just because I want our listeners to get to know you and get to know a little better perspective of who you are. What makes you proud of yourself?
I would say that being able to deal with my autoimmune condition, it's very misunderstood, of course, and people don't see as much of the outside as a condition affects the inside, going through the unknown every day, pain and all that. I'm just proud of the fact that I've been able to handle it as well as I've been able to at this point, because it has taken a toll on me emotionally, mentally, and physically. And just being able to go through each and every day as much of on a positive note, trying to inspire others as well to be healthier, to be on a mission to lose weight, or whether it's just to feel good overall. If there are any people out there with the same condition that I have, because autoimmune disorders encompasses not just rheumatoid arthritis, but fibromyalgia, lupus, and so on, that hopefully I can be of an inspiration and a role model for them, that, you know, don't let the condition or any type of disease be a factor in your life. Right. Yes, absolutely. So
what is your morning routine?
My morning routine, as far as like on a weekday basis, quite honestly, I do not have like, oh, you know, I meditate and I do this. I'm always running late. You know that already.
I'm always a late person. But if you mentioned it.
I will not sugarcoat it. As a matter of fact, you know, I know this is all like in joke, but, you know, people very close to me have said, girl, you're going to be late for your own funeral. So I'm like, I will not be surprised. So I just barely have enough time to get up and do the things that I, so what I do, actually, I don't have a morning routine, but I do have a nightly routine. I set my stuff out. I have my lunch already packed up. I have everything that I need, because once that button, I hit it in the morning, like my cell phone, I use it for my alarm. Once that thing goes off, I know I have just a limited amount of time to shower, get ready, because I don't have time for the extra stuff. So it's more of a nighttime routine that I have.
There you go. Okay. What is your biggest fear and how do you manage it?
My biggest fear, well, if we're speaking of phobias, are you speaking of phobias or
fear in life, fear of anything?
Fear of anything. Okay, so of course, you know, the fear of failure itself, whether it has been a fear of not being like the best mom, or the fear of not being the best in my field as a fitness instructor or a fitness professional, you know, especially because of my condition as well. I did have a fear of people, quite honestly, finding out about my condition, because I kept it secret for a long time as I was going through the initial symptoms and the initial downsides of it. I did not want people to look at me like, is she even going to be capable of teaching us if she's like this? I didn't want people to label me. So I guess it was just a fear of, you know, not putting my business out there, because it's very personal for me. But I had to overcome it, because I thought, you know what? I'm not the only one that's struggling out there. There's other people that have either gone through cancer, that have gone through the same situation, the same disorders, other type of illnesses and diseases. And that way they know that there's somebody actually there that, you know, can empathize with them. Not that they've gone through exactly the same thing, but it can empathize with them. So from that part, as far as my disorder itself, it's, you know, initially I had that fear. I did overcome it just by, you know, accepting myself having this disorder, this condition, and knowing that I was going to be out there doing the best that I can. I've had to lessen my high impact. I would say like 10 years ago, I was much more high impact than I am now. So had to
What? Let's not go there. I have seen you teach. If this is a quarter of percent of your high impact level, oh God, the Turbo Kid guy would have been so proud of you.
Thank you. Well, I do tell people in my classes, because I sometimes have people come up to me, and members or others that either take my class are like, where do you get your energy from and all that? I honestly do not take any energy drinks. I tell them my energy comes from within. My energy comes from the drive that every day that I wake up with no pain or minimal pain is a great day. You know, that drives me, that moves me. When I had my cast taken off, because I, of course, recently, you know, had surgery on my left hand and wrist. When that cast was taken out, I swear, yesterday when I had taught my Zumba class, I was going all out. And then one of my best friends came up to me and said, I could definitely tell you were in your zone.
You were happy.
You were feeling confident.
Speaking of that, speaking of being in your zone and being in doing what you're passionate about, which is what I'm passionate about, of course, what makes you happy in a few words?
Being able, quite honestly, aside from my children, my kids, being able to dance. Dance has been just therapeutic for me. It has not just been a hobby. It's been life-saving. It's been therapeutic. It's been just a way to cope with, you know, stresses, and whether it's job, relationship, whatever. It's been just key for me to just get through each day or each month. So that makes me happy.
Yeah. So let's dive into the topic that we are speaking about today. So according to the CDC, and just to make sure all of our listeners are clear, we are not medical professionals. We are not providing medical advice. If you do have questions specifically about your condition, about this specific autoimmune system illness, please consult with your doctor or your specialist. If you have specific questions, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. We are coaches who have researched some of the information, and we're trying to share useful information and tips. And we want you guys to be aware and spread the word. But in any way, this is intended to be as a medical professional advice. Okay. According to the CDC, rheumatoid arthritis, or RA, is an autoimmune and inflammatory disease, which means that your immune system basically attacks healthy cells in your body by mistake, which causes inflammation. It attacks specifically the joints, and sometimes many at once, commonly affects the hands, the wrists, and the knees, and it damages the joint tissue and causes long-lasting or chronic pain. Sometimes also lack of balance and deformity, obviously, in the joints. So in your case, how did you how did you start feeling discomfort? Some of the causes also, according to the CDC, some of the symptoms, I'm sorry, are fever, fatigue, weakness, stiffness, and pain. So what did it look like for you? How do you get diagnosed? When did you get diagnosed?
I was 34 years old at the time. And the first symptoms that I started getting was weakness in my hands. I remember so clearly, I remember two incidents where one of them was I was running the bath water for my daughter back then. She was really young, Alondra. She was maybe like four years old. And I remember turning the faucet in the bathtub and all of a sudden my hand slipped and I felt severe pain on my wrists. And I was like, okay, I have never ever had any type of like pain there. So I just, you know, brushed it off. I didn't think anything more of it. Then I remember actually teaching a yoga class at one of the gyms and I was doing a side plank and then holding myself up with my arm completely with my palm flat on the floor. And all of a sudden, and this was so unheard of for me to do or unseen, I collapsed. And the members were like, well, are you okay? What happened? Oh my gosh, you know, you've always been like so strong with holding your planks and stuff. And I honestly said, I mean, at that time I had no clue. And I said, I think I slipped, but like my palm was sweaty. I think I just made something up. And I said, yeah, I think, you know, I slipped. But I was like, what is going on? Yeah, I'm like, you know, because I've never had issues with like holding planks and turning, you know, faucets and stuff. Mm-hmm. So as time progressed, like I would say 3 months later, I was having then pain in my overall joints, my elbows, my knees, my shoulders. And I'm like, okay, either I'm overdoing it in exercise, so I was teaching 20 classes a week, or I need to back off and so on. So once that did not improve, I was having a hard time getting out of the car. I would say like 6 months after, I was getting I was having such difficult time getting out of the car. My brother, and I remember this clear as day, he was like looking at me and he's like, are you okay? He's like, cause you're like walking slower than grandma. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. And I told him, I said, I don't know what's been going on with me, but I'm having a really hard time. My knees are hurting, my elbows are hurting. I said, my hands are hurting, my fingers. I have no clue. And he's like, well, you better get it checked out. And I said, yeah, I said, it's getting worse. So I went to a primary. He looked at me, he's a primary. And he's like, well, you're too young to have osteoarthritis because you're only 34 years old. So, but I'm thinking maybe lay off, you know, the exercising for a bit, make sure you have time to recover, and here's some painkillers. Well, yeah, I mean, I took the painkillers and they worked for a little bit, but not to, you know, help out with the stiffness that I was feeling and the overall, like, just the joints locking. Went back to him about a month later and I said, you know what, the painkillers are fine, they're making me kind of drowsy more than anything, and I still have to work and then I have two, you know, small kids, but it's not really helping me out. And then my fingers started becoming really inflamed, like swollen. And so he's like, he's like, I think there's something else going on, but I'm not the one to diagnose, so you're gonna have to go see a specialist. So he recommended me to go see a rheumatologist. And at that time, I was like, rheumatologist? I mean, I barely even knew what a rheumatologist was.
That's probably a concept where you thought, oh, this is for old people. Like, I'm in my 30s. What are you talking
exactly.
about?
Exactly.
I'm healthy. Yes. I teach all the classes. What are you talking about, right?
Absolutely. So I went to go see the rheumatologist, and he looked at me, and he's like, form a fist. I could hardly form a fist because my fingers were so swollen and, like, you know, the joints were hurting so bad. And I was like, no, I can't even form a fist. He's like, well, you got to get the movement going again, because otherwise you're going to start becoming really stiff. He's like, I think I have an idea what you have. And he pointed out to a chart, and he's like, I think you may have rheumatoid arthritis. You could also possibly have lupus. I've got to figure out which one it is, or if you have both. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I've never even heard of those things. Yeah. So I looked at the chart and he's like, you just keep in mind that if we don't take care of this, this is how it's going to progress, and so on and so forth. Well, he put me on prednisone immediately, which is, of course, the steroid. Worked wonderfully, of course.
Anti-inflammatory, yep.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that brought the swelling down, the pain and everything. I was feeling like I had never had anything. Well, the only problem is, it's not good to be on prednisone for a long time. So he said, no, we can't have you be on prednisone for too long, but this is initially to curb away all the pain and all the discomfort and everything. came back with the results. I was RA positive. Fortunately, he said, you do not have lupus. I said, okay.
What kind of testing did he do besides the physical one?
Blood work. They have to take vials of blood, about three of them, and they test for the RA factor. There's a certain protein that they're looking for. Okay. And if it's very present in the blood work, that means that you have rheumatoid arthritis. And mine was very, very high.
Oh, because wow.
He shows results and he's like, yeah, you're very active, very high. Right away, they put me on Plaquenil, which is one of the drugs that they initially use, methotrexate. And they had me on prednisone for a little bit longer, and then they took me off of it. So I was on that medication for a few years. But quite honestly, looking back, I did a huge mistake because I was so afraid of the side effects of all these drugs, because I was reading into it. And of course, it causes cancer. It causes, there's a bunch of side effects, nausea, all of that. I was like, well, I don't want to be on the drugs for too long. So I actually started weaning myself out of it without my doctor's consent.
Oh, wow.
So I ended up what I felt was going into remission, because then I did not feel like a lot of the side effects. And of course, I kept teaching classes and going about my normal day to day. I moved down in 2008, and then I was still feeling okay at that point. Well, the symptoms started coming back shortly after I moved to Florida. So I was like, okay, I really don't want to get back on the hardcore drugs, but let me see what's going on. Went to go see another rheumatologist here in Florida. He said my RA was active. So he started putting me back on the same drugs, methotrexate,
Plaquenil.
Yeah. Well, not that one, hydrochloricin. Which is another form of Plaquenil. Mm-hmm. And he put me on prednisone again. So I started taking those drugs.
High pain. Coping medicine. It's like to kind of like pace it down because of how much it has progressed at the time, right?
Yes. So it worked, but then I found myself kind of not really feeling the effects of it anymore, like as far as comfort, lessening the pain. Went back to him and he said, you are very, very active. And with your rheumatoid arthritis, I'm going to suggest to put you on Humira. That's a biologic and that's an injection. I freaked out. I said, no, I don't want to get on it. I refused. I said, I don't want to do it. He's like, well, let me just let you know that right now your body is like on fire and we need the fireman to come in. He made that analysis. You need the fireman to come in and put water in it so that way it calms it down, because right now your body is on fire. And I was like, yeah, but I was just deathly like scared of the side effects. Well, forward to now, I really regret not having done it, because as a result, I have faced now second surgery that I just had. I'm facing a third surgery on my other wrist, my knees, the cartilage. They said that it was a kneecap, meaning cartilage, not inside the knee.
Right.
That's completely gone.
Yeah,
that's completely gone. So I've had to have hyaluronic shots on both knees, and actually have a three series of shots. The third one is coming up next week. Fortunately, it's not deep inside the knee, because I even said, hey, I'm not feeling like knee pain, but I'm feeling discomfort whenever I do squatting and all that. And he's like, that's because your kneecap cartilage is gone, not inside the knee. And I said, okay, well, I guess I can look at a positive on that. But yeah, as a result, it's really attacked the joints that you mentioned, the hands, the wrists,
so
the knees.
In the course of being first feeling the symptoms to where you got diagnosed, where you got treatment, did you get the reason why you got it at such a young age? Was there a cause of your body? Because again, sharing information that's shared on the CDC, some of the characteristics of being people at risk of RA are age, sex, and genetics, and also having a very sedentary life, which you didn't have. Mm-mm. So did they tell you, like, this is why we think? Because another reason why it's shared on the CDC that causes RA is gout. And an increase in the uric acid, and also several infections. So if you have been exposed to being, into the flu-like infections, such as sinus infections, all kinds of other breathing or infections in your body, then you kind of start developing that sensitivity to others. Did the doctor, when you went to the specialist, did they tell you what could have caused it for your case?
I asked that question, and they say that the same information you're giving is our factors. Ironically, both my parents do not have it, but my brother actually has been diagnosed with it, and he's 5 years younger than me. So he's 44 years old, and he got diagnosed a few years ago. So we're wondering like how that could be, because both my parents don't have it. I mean, they're very active still to this day, but my brother actually got diagnosed. Now he, I can tell, does not have it as severely as I do, because based on what I know, RA affects women more, more severely than it does men.
Absolutely.
And so my inclination, as far as what I think I know and feel and what I've been going through, that mine is connected more to hormonal changes in my body. I think it's a combination of the hormonal changes, because at around like 35, you're starting to go through some hormonal changes. I started feeling more of the severe symptoms.
Don't tell me any of this. I'm headed that way. And
but let me tell you, there are things, of course, mm-hmm. that I've had to change around a little bit as far as like what I'm eating. Like right now, I have not gotten rid of it completely, but red meat is not very good for people with RA because of the uric acid in it.
I want to ask you about your tips and what has worked for you, because I think it's really important to share that. So you said that it is more risk in women, and that's absolutely true. The statistics that I saw when I was researching is that arthritis affects 54.4 million adults in the United States. That is equivalent to 22.7% of the whole population, which is insane.
Yeah.
And these are statistics on the CDC from 2013 to 2015. So like in the most recent century, which is insane. Another myth is that only adults can get it. Like you said, it was too early at 34, but children can get it nowadays. They are also at risk. And people with arthritis, the majority are women. And in the same stats, it shows that women have higher risk in 31 states of the 50 states in the United States. That's incredibly mind-blowing. And the most affected states are Virginia, Alabama. So there's specific states, and there's no correlation into what is causing this other than just biological, right? Which is
yes, I think it's a combination of factors. I think like environmental factors out there, things that we have put in our bodies. I really regret, like I was a hardcore Diet Coke drinker, and that's like the worst things that you can put in your body. I believe that
I remember when you moved, Diet Coke was your go-to drink. I do remember.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was just addicted to it, and I gave it up back in May of 2019. So actually I call myself being 2 years clean with it because I was just so addicted
Absolutely.
To it, and that would be like the first thing I would drink in the morning, which is the worst thing you can do for your body. So I've had to learn, I've had to grow, I had to mature, and I had to know what is the best way to handle my disorder, what I put in my body and so on. I'm not at all perfectly clean with my nutrition, I will say, because I'm a foodie at heart, but there are things definitely that I have to curb away. Like I try to minimize the dairy intake. Like right now I only drink almond milk, which has really helped me out as far as curbing the dairy. I do not eat a lot of the, say, red meat. I do eat chicken, I do the turkey, but I try to, and it's so hard because of our culture, the delicious, you know, like tacos and all that.
Yeah.
I try to not
Latinos
eat
like
as much
to eat. We just love to eat. Something that you mentioned in treatment, when you will start getting your steroid shots, right? You're getting steroid shots, correct?
You mean steroid shots?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Well, right now, my current treatment is Orencia, which is another biologic. Those are injections, which are weekly. And I'm on methotrexate, and I'm also on folic acid. Folic acid is necessary because, unfortunately, due to the side effects of methotrexate, which can lead to osteoporosis, hair loss, and all that, I need a good folic acid supplement to help curb away those side effects. So I'm doing the hyaluronic acid shots for my knees, and that's just to make sure that the kneecap is cushioned.
Okay. So you're combining the medication with nutrition, with active movement.
Yes. That's yes. Very, very important.
When I was young, when I moved to the United States, which I share in prior podcast, and I joined a ballet team, and in the ballet team, the physical activity of the body is extenuating. It's very invasive because you have to put yourself in different positions physically to perform an act in ballet. And as I continue dancing and I joined a professional dance team when I was in Nicaragua, I started feeling the same effects that you mentioned, like the constant, not teaching because I wasn't teaching at the time, but the constant physical movement of the dance and the practices and the choreos and the big show at the theaters started making me feel so weak. And some of those reflected in my knee, on my left knee. So my left knee was feeling like that, was feeling like locked. And, you know, Latinos, we always like, oh, you should get that taken care of or looked at. So I went to the doctor as well. And at some point in my life, I thought I was developing arthritis. Like I was really scared because when I went to the doctor, he's like, oh, you know what? You're losing a lot of iron. You should be getting this, you should be getting that, you should be getting this. And he actually gave me a shot. He gave me a steroid shot and it felt like heaven. And every time my knee hurt, I wanted to get that shot. Like you said, when you were given prednisone, it was kind of like the instant gratification, right?
Yes.
You feel great.
And yes.
That's not only the key, you know, and this is a personal opinion. It's not a medical opinion, but I feel like science has evolved so much that we also have evolved as humans to get to know and understand that medicine can only do so much, but we have to do the rest. Nutrition has to be involved. Physical yes, activity has
absolutely.
To be involved. Mental health and wellness has to be involved. It's a complete world. So when I went and asked for another shot on another occasion, my doctor was like, you realize you cannot have the shots every time it hurts because it has so much medicine in it that the body takes a long time to dissolve in it. It's not like a little patch. It's a combination of medicine that it will affect you in other areas if you start abusing it. So it's really important that you mention pace yourself. So what is your current treatment and what are some tips to manage RA and improve the quality of life from you to our listeners?
I will first point out, of course, that this is based on my own experience. Obviously, there are people out there that have different levels of RA. Some are not as severe, some are more severe than mine. Based on my own experience, nutrition, in my belief, and based on research that I've been doing on my own, plays a big part of it. Like, for example, my main source of hydration right now is water with lemon. I am religiously about that. First thing that I drink in the morning and throughout the day, I don't do sodas anymore. If I do a juice, it will be like a 100% cranberry juice or pomegranate or orange juice. But even then, I'm not a big like juice drinker either, maybe like once a day. But I believe that again, you know, hydration is so important for your joints and for your muscles to be able to do it naturally through water. And again, lemon, because lemon makes the body alkaline versus acidic. When you have a body that's very acidic, it brings about a, a, a lot of more of the increase of inflammation, of even cancer and all that. And again, this is all based on my own research. I limited, like I said, just a main source of dairy because I do like milk, but I just switched it over to almond milk. I have tried vegan products as well. You know, again, I'm a foodie, so I've had to kind of like give and take, you know, like some of them I do not like, and some of them I do. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Sugar is another big thing. Sugar is very toxic to the body. If anybody knows anything about sugar, it's very hard for the body to break down. And I'm talking about processed sugar, you know, any of the pastries that we like. And, you know, and of course, I'm a foodie too. I like my pastries, but I know that I have to make a compromise to myself not to have it as in abundance every day. You know, I've tried vegan cookies, like the vegan chocolate chip cookies, which I like. Some people say, you know, I don't like the taste or whatever, but, you know, I try to sometimes go that route. And yeah, so I limiting the main processed sugars, having water as hydration, anything like with the red meat, you know, try to cut back on that. And this is in conjunction with exercising. A body in motion will always be in motion. Now, having had my cast off because my hand was immobile for 3 weeks, it's incredible how the body will become stiff and rigid if you don't move it. And now I'm, of course, having to go through occupational therapy to get my movement back. And I'm like, wow, this is just another proof for me that if you don't move your body in a certain way, if you're not active, and even if you can't do, say, like jumps and all that, because people with RA have a harder time with that, walking or whatever you like to do, just stay active. That's one thing that I really want to point out to anybody, either with my disorder or lupus or fibromyalgia, that it may not be as comfortable, but keep your body in motion. The worst you can do, and this is also told to me by my rheumatologist, is to be sedentary, because it will make your body stiff, you'll have more swelling, and overall, even mentally, you're not going to feel well.
Speaking of the mental part, there's a lot of advice out there on emotional, you know, coping with this type of autoimmune systems, because it makes you feel kind of disabled when you're not. You just want to do more. You want to force your body to go the extra mile, but you just can't. So what tips, because you are the whole package, you have the social work and the psychologist expertise, what are some tips that you can share that people can do in the emotional part to cope with an autoimmune system illness like this one?
The first thing is, if you or anybody that is has a support network, whether it's talking to a parent, talking to your best friend, talking to someone else that maybe has a similar condition, joining a support group. I have, right now I'm part of a support, rheumatoid arthritis support group. Just being able to talk to somebody about it, being able to share, you know, how you're feeling on a day-to-day, you know, people that can understand, and maybe necessarily, they don't necessarily have to have the same thing you do, but just have an understanding of maybe what's taking place in your body. Some of these conditions are not exterior, like exterior wise, you cannot see it as much as what people feel inside of it. Like, I've woken up in pain and I've gone to teach class in pain. Well, the people there in class, they won't know. And of course, I'm not going to go in there and say, guys, I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm going to try. Because, you know, yeah. It's, again, we're there for them. So I'm not right. going to be announcing, you know, but I feel so much better afterwards. So do something that you really enjoy doing to cope with it. My first advice is to be active, to do something, whether it's walking, whether it's hiking, whether it's bicycling, or, you know, anything that will keep your body and your joints and muscles moving. Joining a support group, talking to a friend and confidant, someone, of course, that has your back and that will be there for you. Now, of course, just build your business, you know, afterwards, but somebody that you can trust, whether it's a family member or a friend. And meditation, if you need to. I've done that on my own too, to try to meditate, to bring in the positive energy in the outside. Some people do believe in God, some don't. And if you don't believe in God, or you're more of a believer of the higher power, use that to your advantage, you know. Try to get yourself in a calm place try to bring in all that positive energy, try to release the negative. Do not pay attention to what other people, like negative people, have to say. Everybody has an opinion, but what matters is what, you know, you believe and what you're going through.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I am, again, super thankful that you were able to be on this podcast. I'm very happy that you took the time to share with us. And thank you so much, guys, for your attention to this episode. If you have any questions or any topic ideas, send it to Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, letter N, Fit, F-I-T-1, @gmail.com. You can also follow me on Facebook as @BrightAndFitByTatiana or on Instagram, BrightAndFit1. And you can follow Diana on Instagram. What's your Instagram username, Diana?
Yeah, DianitaFitForever. So it's D-I-A-N-I-T-A, Fit Forever. And the my Facebook is under Diana Morales Arce. And I'm also on TikTok at Old School D.
You're big on TikTok, yes. You are such a wonderful, incredible human being. I'm very happy to call you a friend, and I'm very happy that you have chosen to cope with this autoimmune system in a very healthy and fun way. And I hope that our listeners were able to get some really good information. So thank you guys for listening, and see you on the next episode of the Bright and Fit podcast. Have a wonderful
day. Thank you. Thank you, Tati, again, for allowing me to bring this information to your listeners and for hearing us out. And thank you so much.
Bye, guys.